Welcome to the Financial Philosophers Podcast, where we explore the nuances of personal finance, improve our financial literacy, and empower ourselves to achieve financial freedom. Come nerd out with us, and let's take this journey together. Welcome back, everyone. Danny, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing all right. It's a little cold over here, but not too bad.
Nice, yeah.
How are you?
A little chilly down here, too, in our cold basement, despite the weather getting warmer.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not here to talk about weather. We're here to talk about investment returns.
Yeah, part two.
Part two, yeah. So to our listeners, if you didn't see last week's episode, definitely worth checking that out. You don't have to listen to it in order if you don't want, but they're both worth checking out. Today is...
I'd suggest it. I'd say okay. Listen to the first one first and then follow up with this one.
Yeah. So today, you might not understand investment returns part two. Last week we did just some really high level general stuff, just had a candid, you know, casual conversation about it. Today, Danny, I figured we'd, you know, last week we did more like market stuff. Today, I wanted to focus more on
equities, ETFs, mutual funds, et cetera.
Yeah. And today I wanted to talk about, you know, the fixed income cash instruments like CDs, you know, high yield savings accounts, bonds, things like that.
Okay.
Yeah, especially because, you know, we're in a high rate environment and inflation appears to be sticky. Rates are up. And so a lot of people are excited about their emergency fund or their savings account getting, you know, a 4 or 5% yield, which was for so many years never the case. I mean, I remember.
Yeah, unheard of.
Yeah. I mean, just a couple years ago, it was like 1%. If that.
Yeah. And if you have a regular savings account, not a high yield,
right?
You're looking at 0.01%. That's what I was running for a long time. But you know, speaking of those high yields, today is May 3rd as we are recording this. And on May 1st, I got my high yield savings account, deposit, right? Nice. That interest that earns on a monthly basis.
Nice. Yeah.
Love getting those alerts.
Yeah. And on the interest deposit, Danny, I mean, to our listeners, look, this may seem like a simple topic. We're just going to be talking about investment returns pertaining to savings accounts, bonds, CDs, but you would be surprised how many misconceptions there are out there about interest. I mean, we're going to talk about this today. Things like simple interest versus compound interest, APR versus APY, right? Annual percentage rate versus annual percentage yield, and what those actually mean and why there's a difference between the two. Also, a lot of misconceptions people have about 3-month CDs, 6-month CDs, 12-month CDs, 15-month CDs, right? There are so many people I speak to who are perfectly capable individuals, perfectly smart, you know, and had misconceptions or had confusion around some of these things, some of these interest type of topics, interest-bearing accounts, CDs, and things like that. And so while this seems simple on the surface, I think this really warrants a discussion. I think our listeners will come away with some things maybe they didn't know prior to this episode. So let's jump in. The first one, Danny, let's talk about simple interest versus compound interest.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So I'll give you an example of what simple interest is. Simple interest basically means the interest accrues based only on the original principal amount that you put in. So if I put in $100,000 into some type of product that pays 5% simple interest, then it would grow from 100 to 105. That's 5%. And then that 105 would simply grow to 110. That's 5% of the original 100,000. It wouldn't compound on the 105 itself. It's not like the 5% would grow on the 105 from that point forward because this is simple interest.
Yeah, because the interest you're earning is not being added back into that principal.
Right. And some examples of this. I remember one time, when I was client facing some years ago, there was a annuity product that was pretty popular at the time. It may still be popular today. It was a variable annuity with an income rider on it. And okay. I can't remember what company it was, so nobody quote me on this. I want to say it was maybe Nationwide. I can't remember. But you would put in a lump sum, and there was this income benefit pool that was created on the side, kind of like on a separate ledger next to your contribution. And that income benefit would grow by 7% simple each year for so many years. I don't know, maybe 10 years or something, whatever it was. And then at any time, whatever that income benefit amount was worth, you could turn on the income and it would pay a percentage of that income benefit pool. And so that income benefit pool was like guaranteed to never go down. It would grow at simple interest. And at the time, some years ago, 7% sounded like a lot. But to the unsuspecting person who didn't know what simple interest meant, they just saw 7% and went, whoa, that's really attractive. But in reality, you know, you put in 100,000, it would grow to 107 and then to 114, then to 121. It wasn't actually compounding. Saying that wasn't attractive, right? 7% interest can be attractive, especially over a shorter period of time. But
without that compounding, it definitely slows down the rate of growth that you would otherwise see.
Yeah, especially as you get longer term. Yeah, definitely. So that was one example. And another example would be like corporate bonds, Danny. Like if you buy a corporate bond for $10,000, right? And it pays a 5% coupon, right? It'll spit out $500, if you will, per year. That $500 goes to you. It doesn't get reinvested into the individual bond. Assuming we're talking about an individual bond and not like a corporate bond fund, like a mutual fund. Mm-hmm. If it's just a...
That flat bond is not adding, that interest is not being added to that existing principal.
Correct. And it's up to you when you get that payment to do what you want with it, to reinvest it, which rates may be higher, lower, or the same at that time. There's no knowing, right? But that's an example of something you could argue pays simple interest if you really think about it that way. And debt too, right? If you, let's say you take out a loan and it's an interest-only payment schedule, right? Well, unless you're letting that interest accrue, in other words, if you're paying the interest that accrues each year on that debt, well, then it's, if you really think about it, it's just simple interest because you'll, the interest will accrue, you'll pay off the interest, and then it's back down to the original principal, which then generates more interest, which you pay as part of your payment schedule. That's one way you could look at it too, with a simple interest example. And then let's talk about compound interest, right? So I think most people know what this is, right? If you invest money in something and interest accrues, it then gets added to the original principal. So interest that accrues in further years is based on the original principal plus any prior interest that had accrued in that account. So most people, I think, intuitively know that because that's what your typical savings account would be like, right? Your high yield savings account, CDs, multi-year guaranteed annuities, U.S. savings bonds, like I-bonds, for example, those do compound interest. So, and with debts too, right, Danny? I mean, mortgage, car loan, credit cards, student loans, those types of things. If you take out a scheduled debt over multi-year payment schedule, the interest is going to be compounding against you.
Yeah, that's why you have to pay those off as aggressively as possible if you have the cash flow to do so.
Yeah, I mean,
most of the time.
Yeah, it's a capital allocation question, right? You know, based on what you have available to you to invest or pay off debt. A lot of people find tackling some of those debts, especially in a higher rate environment, to be an attractive option to consider. And a fun call out there. We did an episode on that. But yeah, so let's talk about compounding, though. There's more to peel back on this topic, Danny.
Okay.
Assets may compound differently from one another, right? Some compound annually, some compound semi-annually, some monthly, some daily. I don't think people should get too focused on how often something compounds, but do be aware that there is a difference, right? So if I put in, give you an example, if I put $10,000 into an account that pays 5% and it compounds annually, that means at the end of that year, I will truly have $10,500, that 500 being 5% of 10,000, right? That's a true 5.0% return, right? But if I have something that compounds daily, well, then it basically means you put 10,000, let's say same 5%, right? You would take that 5% and you would divide it by the number of days in the year, right? And so you get a super tiny percentage for each day that it compounds. But you do that over an entire year, and that 10,000 will actually grow to $10,512.67, I believe. So there's a $12.67 difference, right? So there is actually, despite both saying they're a 5% yield, one actually produced more. It produced 5.12%. That's 12 basis point difference, right? That may not seem like a lot, but it, I did a quick little math here, and if somebody invested $10,000 per year for 40 years at 5%, they would end up with $1.268,000. But if somebody invested 10,000 per year for 40 years at 5.12%, meaning it compounded daily instead of annually, they ended up with $1,307,000. So almost $40,000 more, right? Over 40 years.
Okay.
Now,
yeah,
that's a lot.
I mean, that's a notable difference.
Yeah. That could be
over that amount of time.
Could be an annual income for somebody, right? That could be a year of expenses. So I
will say, I personally have never encountered anything that compounds daily that I'm aware of. For example, my high yield account, it does accrue daily, but it compounds monthly. And in terms of many dividends, you're seeing compounding on a quarterly basis when, you know, those payments hit your account and then get added back into the principal. And then many bonds are semi-annual. But I personally have never seen anything on a daily basis.
I think a lot of savings accounts and money market accounts compound daily. I don't think it's too uncommon. I do think it does happen. I think it just depends on the bank and how they do it. But again, at the end of the day, it's not a huge difference between the two. I remember a quick personal story. I remember talking to somebody. They told me that they had went with this account because it compounded really regularly. I think it was daily. And they chose a lower interest rate because it compounded daily, as opposed to another option that had a higher interest rate that compounded like annually or something. And
really should have done the math.
Exactly. And, yeah.
On that one.
It's like,
I see your notes here, and this really stands out to me. That 10,000 at 5% compounded monthly is 10,511. I'm discounting the cents.
Right.
And the 5% at compounding daily is 10,512. We've got a difference of a dollar versus daily or monthly.
Yeah.
So definitely need to do the math and compare the interest rates you're looking at versus the compounding time.
Right. Now, this is a great segue to introduce the difference between APR and APY. So the 10,000 at 5%, that 5% is the annual percentage rate. That is the rate that is quoted, 5%. But in that compounded monthly example, right, it's 10,511. So you could say it's 5.11%. That is actually the true yield. That would be the APY, the annual percentage yield. So just keep an eye out for that to our listeners. Whenever you're looking for something, it could be an account that earns you interest, or it could even be taking out a debt, right? Sometimes you will see these terms, APR versus APY. That is the difference between the two. The APR, the annual percentage rate, is just the stated rate that you see. But the APY is the effective yield you are getting based on the compound schedule, if you will.
Now, so, I'm thinking about consumer debt, things like credit cards. Don't most credit card companies advertise their APR? That's kind of the primary number they show, because it's a little bit lower than the actual APY that affects the customers?
I believe you're correct. Yes. I just did a quick Google search because I wasn't sure when you started asking that. According to Investopedia, it says lenders advertise the APR.
Yeah. Because it looks a little bit lower, and it looks like you're going to owe a little bit less money.
Yeah.
When you're not taking into effect that compounding of the debt.
Correct. Yeah. It's certainly to their advantage to advertise that. However, quick callback to you might not understand investment returns part one, the one we did last week. We talked about the difference between time-weighted returns and dollar-weighted returns, right? Where time-weighted returns was the return that, for example, mutual funds would advertise in public brochures and things like that. And the point you made was that, well, of course, that's what they'd have to advertise because they can't account for each individual investor's cash flows in and out and the timing of when they get into and out of things. And I think the same rationale also applies to the APY, right? Because your yield with a credit card, for example, your actual APY, what you pay in interest, is largely contingent on how long you keep that balance on there, and it's accruing interest on interest. And so
that's fair.
I think it's fair to say to the credit card companies, they probably can't know like who's going to pay how much interest based on their debt repayment habits, if you will. But
that makes
it
sense.
Is a good call out that you make, though, because, you know, we see the APR on, you know, consumer debt, credit cards, things like that might make us think the interest is one thing. But if we're not diligent with keeping our credit card balances paid off, may be paying a bit more than what that actual, you know, APR is. So good call out on that. Yeah, let's move on. So let's go to some common misconceptions, Danny, about investing in bank CDs, things like that, with certain durations, you know, so many months or so many years. This is one area that I'm often so surprised that a lot of people don't understand. And I think it's just because there's not a lot of good financial education. You know, I don't think financial literacy is one thing that schools and our education system is quick to jump on. I think that's an area that's sorely missing.
And it's something that we really should be teaching.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of our listeners know this, but I also wouldn't be surprised if there are a handful that don't. If you see a CD that says 3-month CD at 5%, right? Please know that that 5% is an annual number, not a 3-month number. You do not actually earn 5% by holding a CD for 3 months. You would actually, you would only earn 1.25%. You'd earn 1/4 of 5%, right? That's how the math works on that.
Everyone would be buying the short-term certificates of deposit if you could earn 5% in 3 months and keep rolling those over. That'd be great.
Yeah. I think a good rule of thumb to always keep in your back pocket is that anytime you see a stated percentage quoted on any type of investment product or savings vehicle, always, always assume it is an annualized number. And if the duration, the holding period is less than that annual number, you have to do a little bit of math dividing that interest rate, that stated rate, up to match the duration of how long you'd hold it to get what your true yield would be, right? So in this example, right?
Okay.
That 3-month CD at 5%, the APR would be 5%. But if you actually think about the true yield, it's only 1.25%, right? So there again.
Over the 3-month period.
Yeah, over the 3-month period.
And the same thing, if you're looking at, you have here a 15-month CD, it's actually the amount that you'll receive over the 15 months will be higher than 5.5%.
Correct. Yeah, yeah. If you had a 15-month CD at 5.5%. And that, actually, I have a story about 15-month CD. Again, talking about perfectly rational and intelligent people, I was talking with somebody who is a multimillionaire, okay? Very successful business owner, very intelligent person. You would have no doubt of this person's intelligence if you met them, right? You just speak to them for 5 minutes and it's abundantly clear this is a smart person. They bought a bank CD 15 months at 5%. And they were surprised when they realized, when I told them that they're actually going to earn more than 5%. Their reaction was, well, what do you mean? I thought that if I hold it for 15 months, then I earn 5% after the 15 months. And it's like, no. They put $1 million in this thing, by the way.
And okay, that's quite a bit.
Yeah. So they put $1 million into it. So in their mind, they're like, okay, after 15 months, that million will turn into 1,050,000. They were looking for a safe liquid, just a safe place to store capital. Actually, not liquid. Sure. They just needed something. It was just like a short-term savings bucket. But I did the math. And I was like, no. That 1 million is actually going to be around 1,064,000 because you're earning 5% for the first 12 months and then 1.25% for the next 3 months, right? Because the 3 months is 1/4 of a year and the 5% is the yearly rate. So you take 1/4 of that. And so their actual yield to maturity, if you will, was 6.43%, right? So that was a nice surprise. They got very excited to hear that. But where I'm going with this is, they underestimated their personal return, what they were going to get from this, by almost 30%, right? That's a huge underestimation of what their real return was going to be. So, I don't know. Seems like a simple example, Danny. Like, this seems like a very elementary topic, but I have run into this so many times. I've even met financial planners, for crying out loud, who did not realize this.
That is very surprising to me. But I can certainly understand how the average person who is not involved in, you know, in finance or in financial markets, how you could look at this and you're like, okay, I'm going to purchase this product, right? It says it's 3 months and the next to it, it says 5%. So I think, like, on the surface, right? Mm-hmm. This is just someone looking at the numbers on the screen, the numbers on the sheet of paper, and hasn't done any research or had any education in the topic. I think it's fair that most people would not automatically assume that those numbers shown are an annualized number where you would have to continue to buy these over time in order to reach that over the course of 1 year.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, in a 3 month CD example, I suppose if you bought it for 3 months and then rolled it into another 3 month and another 3 month and another 3 month, you did that, you know, four periods, then you truly earn the 5%, assuming it stayed at 5%.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I feel like this is just an important concept to let people know. I had to explain this a lot, Danny, went back in 2022. I think it was in, I forget what month, June or so, when the I bond, the U.S. savings I bond was at 9.62%.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people thought, oh, I'm going to get 9.62% if I just buy this bond for a year. And I had to explain to people, hey, it pays interest every 6 months. And that rate is going to change every 6 months. So you're actually getting half of 9.62 over the next 6 months, so 4.81%. Mm-hmm. And then it might stay the same, or the rates may change depending on what inflation is, right? Like yep. what those numbers come into. So that was just, I cannot tell you how many people I've had to explain that to. And that just, again, goes to show that like, there's not good information out there to explain some of these simple concepts. There's just a lot of misconceptions out there with regular folks who want to put their money to work and don't fully understand how some of these things work. So, you know, I think that's the goal of today's episode is to peel back some of those curtains and give you some clarity on how these things work. But yeah, closing thoughts, Danny, just a reminder to our listeners, be mindful of these differences, you know, be better informed on these nuances and make sure you're factoring in these things, right? If you were looking at something, maybe you want to put your money in a high yield savings, maybe a CD, maybe some other product that has a high yield on it. Be aware of what the difference is between the rate and the yield, the APR and the APY. Be aware of your holding period. You know, think of those stated percentages as an annual number. Be mindful of how long you're going to hold and know what your true return is going to be over the holding period. I think that's it's a good place to stop there. Oh, quick shout out. Episodes 25 and 26. Danny, you and I did high yield options for your cash, parts 1 and 2. That just makes sense to call those out on the back of this yeah. topic. So could be a good one to check out.
That's a good call out.
So,
well, yeah. Chris, thanks for talking through this.
Yeah, thank you.
And to everyone listening, if you made it this far and you are enjoying the content, consider giving us a review on any of the platforms that you listen or watch on. It would be greatly appreciated and very helpful to the show.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks. Everyone, thanks again for joining, and we'll see you next week.
All opinions expressed in this program are for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon for any investment decisions or financial advice. Always remember that investing involves risk and the possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a qualified professional before making any important financial decisions.